Hello, you're listening to the Black Country Talking News. I'm Rob, a producer, and this week's edition is for the 16th of February 2022.
Hello. And welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by sight loss charity Beacon Centre. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. Speaking for us this week, we have myself, Rob, Alastair, Peter, Callum, Helen, Angela, Christine, Ed, Liz, Ian, Mary, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the weekly quiz, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, the weather, news about developments in bionic eye technology. We hear from the work experiences of Callum, who works at BT with a sight loss condition, and rounding all that off with a piece from TNF Soundings about why our calendar is the way it is. However, we start this week as always with our Guess the Sound question. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So, here's this week's clip. Have a think on that, and I will reveal the answer later, alongside the usual quiz answers. We have now, as always then, some local news, brought to us by Angela, Ed, Liz, Ian, and first up, we hear the voice of Christine.
A major investigation is underway after a doctor who worked at Dudley's Russell's Hall Hospital was arrested on suspicion of child sex offences. The 34-year-old man, who has not been named, also previously worked at Royal Stoke University Hospital in Staffordshire. He was arrested on suspicion of sexual assault in December and is now on bail as Staffordshire Police investigate. No action was taken when the same force investigated the same doctor in 2018. He is believed to have been based in A&E departments in both hospitals and worked in another department in Dudley. He was the subject of a number of complaints, including the circumstances surrounding the examinations of two girls aged 7 and 15 at Stoke. Chiefs at both hospitals have confirmed he is no longer a member of staff and have set up telephone helplines for concerned patients and their families. Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust Medical Director Julian Hobbs said, "The individual no longer works at the Trust. We are working closely with Staffordshire Police and cannot make any further comment at present." In a statement, Staffordshire Police said, "A 34-year-old man from the West Midlands was arrested on suspicion of sexual assault in December 2021. He was released on bail with conditions pending further inquiries. An investigation is ongoing." Detectives have identified 9 potential child victims, according to the Sunday Times, which reported the doctor was excluded from the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust in March and was suspended by the General Medical Council in October. It also stated that the doctor had rejected any allegations he had committed a criminal act and was cooperating with the investigations. The Russell's Hall helpline for concerned families is 01384 322 311.
An Aladdin's cave full of stolen vehicles, car parts, number plates and cannabis was found when police tracked a stolen car to a Black Country industrial unit. A Ford Fiesta had been stolen in Lye last Wednesday, and then, after a tip-off about its location in Briley Hill, officers closed in on the unit. Spotting the police, a man ran from the premises and, in a failed bid for freedom, entered a cafe and pretended to be a customer. However, officers saw through the escape bid and arrested him on suspicion of car theft and then raided the station drive unit. A West Midlands police spokesman said, "Inside the unit were body shells from several stolen cars, including another Fiesta stolen in Coventry on February the 3rd, a BMW taken in Wolverhampton the following day, and a Skoda Octavia stolen in Leicestershire on New Year's Eve. We've also recovered number plates from more stolen vehicles, cloned plates and an array of parts we suspect have been chopped from stolen cars. Vehicle experts are now meticulously going through the car parts to try and piece together evidence to link them to car thieves." Vehicle examiner Boyd Howell said, "It's quite a small unit, but it's packed with stolen vehicle parts. All the signs are this is a significant criminal operation. So far, we've identified at least 15 stolen vehicles linked to the premises. There are hundreds of parts, mainly from Fiestas, but also BMWs, and we'll be looking to link these to offences across the region and beyond." He added, "We also found a small cannabis production set up at the unit." A 34-year-old man has been bailed while police conduct further inquiries and forensically examine the recovered vehicle parts.
The latest NHS figures show that at the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust, 34% of patients who turned up in an ambulance in the week to February the 6th waited longer than half an hour, higher than the national average of 21%. It was also over the average for England at the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, where 27% of the 891 arrivals had to wait more than 30 minutes. The figure was 13% at Sandwell and West Birmingham Hospitals NHS Trust and 3% at Walsall Healthcare NHS Trust. In a report to the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust's Board of Directors last month, its Chief Executive Diane Wake said that care homes closing their doors due to COVID guidance was impacting on delayed patient discharges and ambulance handover times. A performance report for December, which was put before the board at the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust during a meeting earlier this month, said ambulance handover breaches remained high. However, it did show some improvement for the 30 to 60 minute target. It added, "The over 60 minute target breaches showed deterioration during the month. There is a comprehensive ambulance handover recovery plan that has been discussed and agreed with West Midlands Ambulance Service."
There have been renewed concerns raised about the prospect of an end to government funding to ensure crucial bus routes are maintained in the region. It has been estimated the West Midlands Combined Authority could be called on to provide up to an extra £50 million in funding if funding from the government is not extended. Without it, less profitable routes, which nevertheless provide crucial access for many residents, could be put at risk of service cuts from operators. The government's bus recovery grant was provided to operators to cover losses due to reduced passenger numbers during the pandemic, but is due to end at the end of March this year. It was reported this week that a letter written to the government by Metro mayors, including West Midlands Mayor Andy Street, warned levels of funding for buses are not adequate and cited the potential loss of the grant. Concerns were raised at the West Midlands Combined Authority Board meeting on Friday, as it approved its budget, including £143.8 million revenue budget for transport delivery. The meeting heard that a revised budget proposal may be needed later in the year once the government's position on the grant is known. A previous report to the board stated, "It is almost certain that in face of the National Bus Recovery Grant ending or being reduced, that operators will seek to rationalise their operations in order to remain financially viable, meaning that the network faces risks of service cuts, fare increases or reliance on increased subsidy. Operators are already seeking to maintain the most profitable routes, placing less profitable routes that carry fewer passengers but remain essential for network cohesion and providing crucial access for many residents at risk."
Authorities in the Black Country have been given more than £1.6 million to help them move rough sleepers off the streets and into long-term homes. The cash has been allocated by the government in the latest round of national funding designed to build new homes and help people access housing. The four Black Country councils have each been given around £400,000 under the Rough Sleeping Accommodation Programme, while the local authorities in Stafford and Lichfield have been given £312,000 and £165,000 respectively. Birmingham City Council has been allocated £1.6 million. Some areas, including Cornwall, the London Borough of Islington and Greater Manchester Combined Authority, have been given more than £6 million. Eddie Hughes, the Conservative MP for Walsall North and the minister responsible for rough sleeping, said, "One person sleeping rough on our streets is one too many, and more is needed to help people who find themselves in this terrible situation. That's why I'm delighted to announce this funding for the Rough Sleeping Accommodation Programme, which is supporting people to access housing and, crucially, specialist support to rebuild their lives and become independent again. This government does not just want to make a dent in the number of rough sleepers. We want to end rough sleeping for good. And through innovative programmes like this, we're on track to ensure no one is forced to spend a night on the streets. The money is part of £174 million being given to the councils in a bid to provide 2,900 homes for rough sleepers across the country between 2021 and 2024.
Now it's time to hand over to Helen, who has for us this week's Beacon Update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen, back with another Beacon Update for you. And I've got some exciting news to start with this week. Can you help run Beacon for a year with one donation? Well, we've just launched our Fiverr Fortnight campaign to ask if you can spare £5 to make a difference for people with sight loss. Why £5? Well, around 260,000 people live in our local area, and if everyone donated £5, we would raise £1.3 million, which is enough to run Beacon Centre for the Blind for one whole year. It's easy to get involved, and you could even win yourself a signed Wolves football if you donate by February the 27th. Here's how you can show us some love. You can head to our Facebook page by searching for Beacon Centre and donating there. You just hit the donate button at the top of the page. You can also enter our virtual balloon race by heading to www.balloonrace.com/beacon. That's www.balloonrace.com/beacon. And you can also donate £5 by texting Beacon Fiverr, that's Beacon Fiverr, to 70085. Text costs £5 plus one standard rate message. If you want to find out more about the campaign, just head to our website www.beaconvision.org. Now, we've been out and about at a Dudley Borough recruitment fair this past week, talking about what you could get out of a career in care, as well as why it's good to volunteer. If you want to know more, why not give us a call on 01902 880 111 or email inquiries@beaconvision.org. And talking about volunteer opportunities, how would you like to make someone's week with a phone call? If you sign up to become a volunteer for Beacon's telephone befriending scheme, you'll be doing just that every time you pick up the phone. You'll get the added benefit of a lovely chat each week as well. To find out how to sign up, email people@beaconvision.org or call 01902 880 111. We're always keen to hear from people with sight loss who may want to volunteer to chat with two others in a similar situation. Lastly this week, we've got some sad news to share. We wanted to let you know that the amateur football stalwart Jim Cartwright, who helped raise thousands of pounds for the Beacon Centre through the JW Hunt Cup, has passed away. Jim, who was 83, was a chairman of a cup between 1994 and 2007, but he also played an integral role in several clubs and leagues around Wolverhampton. He loved to make a difference, and away from football, he helped organise children's Christmas parties and even ran the bar at a work social club. We're so honoured that Jim took the time to support us through the JW Hunt Cup, which was created in 1926 to help raise funds solely for Beacon. You can find out more about some of his achievements on our website, beaconvision.org/news. We'd like to send our love to everyone who knew him. That's it for this week, and hopefully I'll be back to catch up with you all again soon.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Up now, we have some more local news. And starting this one, we first hear the voice of Angela.
Cleaners on trains serving the West Midlands are to go on strike amid growing disputes over pay, a union has announced. Members of the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union, who clean Avanti West Coast trains, which serve Birmingham, Wolverhampton, Staffordshire and Shrewsbury, will stage two 48-hour walkouts from the evenings of February the 24th and March the 10th. The cleaners employed by Italian Serviced are paid less than the voluntary real living wage and have no company sick pay, said the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union. General Secretary Mick Lynch said, "Our cleaner members on Avanti West Coast trains have been left with no choice but to take further strike action. Previous strike action in January was solidly supported across both days. We have now called two 48-hour strikes to remind privateer Italian Serviced that this issue is not going away and their latest paltry offer was an insult to our members. The people who clean our railways are heroes who risk their lives and health every day to keep our essential services running. But the way Italian Serviced is treating its workers on West Coast trains is an utter disgrace." An Avanti West Coast spokesman said, "We're disappointed by the decision to proceed with industrial action. Although the dispute is between the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union and Italian Serviced and not with us, we are working alongside our partners to implement a contingency plan. There will be no impact on the services we are running in our timetable."
Gas company Cadent has apologised after temporary traffic lights mistakenly installed on a stretch of road without permission caused mayhem for residents. Drivers faced chaotic traffic after the lights were installed on Gospel End Road in Sedgley last week, causing tailbacks as far as Wombourne. The lights were installed by Cadent, which is carrying out gas mains works in the area, who have since apologised for the issue. A spokesman for Cadent said, "This was our error, absolutely. Our teams are upgrading gas mains in the local area, replacing old metallic pipes with new plastic ones, and our traffic management just wasn't set up as it should be. We are so sorry to everyone impacted by this mistake." Dudley Council said that while some lights were permitted for the work, permission was not granted for the stretch of road where they were erected. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "We were made aware of significant traffic delays around Gospel End in Sedgley and have been in contact with Cadent, which is carrying out permitted critical gas mains works in the area. A set of temporary traffic lights which breached the permit conditions have been removed. People should expect some delays due to ongoing works, but traffic flow is now much improved. Motorists were left fed up with the delays caused by the work. One described the scene as absolute chaos, while another said there was traffic chaos for no apparent reason."
Wolverhampton Council bosses have unveiled a refreshed plan on how specialist services for residents and businesses will be upgraded over the next 2 years. A five-year programme outlining the proposals for Wolverhampton was launched in 2019. A meeting of the City Council's Scrutiny Board last week received a detailed update on the plan's progress. David Patterson, the Council's Director of Governance, told members, "This is a really important document that details what the Council wants to achieve for our residents and our businesses in the city, which is linked in with a detailed performance framework setting out how we measure outcomes and impacts. Also, critically, how we are spending our money linked into those plans and that framework. Since the launch of the plan in 2019, the world we live in and work in has changed significantly. Key policy areas have been incorporated into a refreshed narrative and updated structure, which has a focus on delivery and performance. The refreshed plan also aligns the council plan with the key priorities and objectives identified in the Relighting Our City Recovery Framework, members were told. The plan continues to identify an overarching ambition that Wulfrunians will live longer, healthier lives, delivered through six council plan priorities. Strong families where children grow up well and achieve their full potential. Fulfilled lives with quality care for those that need it. Healthy, inclusive communities. Good homes in well-connected neighbourhoods. Getting more local people into good jobs and training. A thriving economy in all parts of the city.
Children will now have to be accompanied by an adult to qualify for free swimming during half term in Dudley Borough after antisocial behaviour during the summer holidays. Youngsters under 16 and not accompanied by an adult will have to pay at the new Duncan Edwards Leisure Centre in Dudley and Crystal Leisure Centre in Stourbridge. Any child aged 16 or under living in the borough can sign up for the free swimming lessons between Saturday, February the 19th and Sunday, February the 27th. Councillor Simon Phipps, Cabinet Member responsible for leisure centres, warned swimmers to expect queues due to there being no booking system. He said, "I welcome the return of the free swimming initiative, which always proves hugely popular over the school holidays. As we can only operate the scheme at two pools instead of three at the moment, and we are unable at this time to offer advance bookings, I would advise that there could be long queues to get in and that demand may very well outstrip supply. We are looking into whether a booking system can be introduced for future holidays." He added, "Unfortunately, we have had to make a change requiring young people to have a responsible adult with them. I would urge parents to familiarise themselves with the new rules and make arrangements to accompany their children to avoid any disappointment on arrival. The change has been made due to antisocial behaviour during the last school holidays, which is a huge shame, but we do need to ensure our staff and our facilities are treated properly. We will review how things go over February half term and assess what we do moving forwards for the Easter and Whitsun school holidays. To register you or your child for free swimming or to find out more, visit www.freeswimmingdudley.co.uk.
Four schools in Wolverhampton have been given substantial investments in order to allow them to expand and create more pupil places. Rising demand for pupil placements across the city will see St Bartholomew's CV Primary School, Hill Avenue Academy, Morton School and St Edmund's Catholic Academy benefit from the permanent expansion plans involving new classrooms and additional facilities. The investments are set to result in a total of 710 additional pupil places being created across all four schools. Councillor Dr Michael Hardacre, the Council's Cabinet Member for Education, Skills and Work, said, "We know that the environment in which children learn can make a big difference to their education. And over the last 15 years or so, we have invested hundreds of millions of pounds in the redevelopment and refurbishment of much of Wolverhampton's school estate, primarily through the Building Schools for the Future programme. It's very good news that a number of local schools are receiving fresh investment to expand their numbers, which I know will be much welcomed by pupils and staff alike." Rachel Kilmster, head teacher at St Bartholomew's, said, "We are incredibly excited about the building of our three new early years foundation stage classrooms. The extra space has enabled us to expand our school, offering 15 additional places per year group moving forward. Also, access to outdoor learning, which is so important for our pupils, will be significantly enhanced, and the modern purpose-built, specifically designed indoor provision will provide a wonderful learning environment for our early years children." Katie Kent, CEO of the St Bartholomew's CE Multi Academy Trust, added, "We are so pleased about the new building at St Bartholomew's, as this expansion means that more children can become part of the St Bart's family and thus benefit from the excellent teaching and wonderful nurturing environment already in place at the school."
Up now then, it's time to get your thinking caps on, as we have the quiz questions for this week. Hello, and welcome to this week's Tea Fiend Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. How many leaves, approximately, does it take to make 1 pound of tea? Question 2. What are the two main types of tea? Question 3. How tall would tea bushes grow if left in the wild? Question 4. Where did the word caddy originate? Question 5. When did the first tea bag commercially appear? And question 6. Who sold cheaper tea in the 1700s? I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck. While you're ruminating over those, we'll have for you some more local news. And starting this one off first, we hear Liz.
More mobile network equipment will be put on streetlights, bus shelters and traffic lights in the Black Country as part of a new government scheme to help boost connectivity. Dudley, Sandwell, Walsall and Wolverhampton all stand to benefit from the scheme, which aims to cut red tape and install more 4G and 5G kit. The smaller wavelength of 5G phone signals means they can carry much more data, but more antennas are needed across towns and cities to ensure seamless coverage. Telecoms providers often find it hard and time-consuming to check whether CCTV poles, road signs, bus shelters or public buildings are suitable for network equipment. Now, under a pilot scheme led by West Midlands Combined Authority, network providers will have easier access to public buildings, traffic lights and signs. Digital Infrastructure Minister Julia Lopez said the pilot will help by modernising the way local authorities and operators work together. Everyone gets frustrated when their mobile signal is poor, particularly when patchy coverage holds up important work and social calls and makes it harder to do stuff online, she said. That is why we are determined to get the UK the connectivity it needs by rolling out better mobile coverage as quickly as possible. It is all part of our joined-up strategy to deliver world-class connectivity to every corner of our country. 5G offers download speeds up to 100 times faster than 4G, making mobile phones much quicker and able to process ever larger amounts of data.
A much-loved Black Country woodwork group, which has been running for the past 30 years, has made an emotional appeal to find a new home. Senior Citizens Enterprise Woodwork Group consists of people from different sections of the community, with ages ranging from 65 to 96. Members have contributed enormously to their communities, providing schools with bird boxes and residents with wheelchair access ramps. Many of the members are widowers who, in some instances, find themselves in total isolation, with the group providing them with the opportunity to rejoin society again. Over the last decade, the group has occupied one room in the old Adventure Playground Centre on Meadow Road, Dudley, but had to leave last year to make room for a new boxing club for children. The group has now been without a building for 9 months. Mike Smith, 75, chairman of the Senior Citizens Enterprise Woodwork Group, said, "We need to find a new building. The people who come to the club are either widowed or up to the age of 90. This might be the only time they get out of the house. They just want to come up, have a tea, socialise. It makes a hell of a lot of difference to how people feel. They do miss it. I keep being asked, when is it coming back?" Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of Dudley Council, said, "We have worked hard to help find the group a new home and offered to move all of their sizeable equipment for free if such a location could be found. We offered to put them in touch with every school in the borough which had woodworking equipment. held talks with Dudley College and had positive discussions with Provision House in Dudley Town Centre. We also advised on possible grant opportunities to help with any such relocation. Unfortunately, the demands of the group are extensive and very specific. We have not been able to find a compromise to suit all parties, and we are now running out of options.
Wolverhampton South West MP Stuart Anderson has urged the government to level up opportunities for people with disabilities in areas such as employment, housing and education. In a speech to the House of Commons, the Tory MP demanded further action to tackle the disability unemployment gap. It was part of a debate on the Down Syndrome Bill, which has now completed its passage in the Commons. The private members' bill, tabled by Dr. Liam Fox MP, aims to improve services for people with Down syndrome. Mr. Anderson used the opportunity to call on the government to double down on its commitment to levelling up opportunities for disabled people. Across the UK, there are now over 390,000 more disabled people in employment than in 2019. Yet the disability employment rate remains at 52%. Mr. Anderson called on ministers to expand the provision of support for disabled people and those with health conditions who would like to begin work. He said, "Despite falling across most areas, I am concerned that the disability unemployment gap remains too high in the West Midlands. Everyone ought to have equal opportunities to work, and so I am pleased that the government is committed to seeing 1 million more disabled people in work by 2027, with good progress already being made." He added, "I have called on ministers to double down on these efforts so everyone can benefit from our ambitious agenda to level up opportunities." Gillian Keegan, Minister for Care and Mental Health, said, "This is an important consideration on which we have not done well enough to date. We will continue to explore any steps required."
A multi-million pound plan to convert a former care home in Stourbridge into new affordable council homes has been given the green light. Dudley Council has been granted planning permission to convert New Swinford Hall into 18 apartments with either one or two bedrooms. The hall was previously used by the council to provide step-down accommodation for people well enough to leave hospital but not well enough to return home. Councillor Laura Taylor-Childs, Cabinet Member for Housing and Community Services, said, "As we continue our efforts to provide affordable homes in our borough, we need to explore every option available to us. New Swinford Hall has been out of use for some time, and although it was no longer suitable for its previous use, it does provide a perfect opportunity for housing. We are able to repurpose an existing council building, which not only reduces the building costs for the council, but also offers carbon savings. This is about making the best use of every asset we have available to us and providing much needed homes for people in our borough. We've seen other examples where this has worked really well, including the redevelopment of the former Mount Pleasant Junior School in Coesley. The new homes will be built within the existing shell of the building, and the exterior will be given a modern makeover. Work will start on site in spring 2022 and is expected to take up to 12 months to complete. All 18 apartments will be available to rent to people on the council's housing waiting list.
Wolverhampton's libraries are back open to pre-pandemic hours with a new range of activities planned for the spring. Only Collingwood Library remains closed as it is within the Broadway Gardens retirement village in Bushbury, and work is ongoing to ensure it can open safely. A Wolverhampton City Council spokesman said, "The council is working with Broadway Gardens to ensure that the library can reopen safely as soon as possible. Libraries each offer free Wi-Fi and free access to PCs, as well as printing and photocopying facilities. Study spaces can also be reserved at Central Library." Councillor Jasbir Jaspal, Cabinet Member for Public Health and Wellbeing, said, "I'm pleased that our libraries are now back to their normal opening hours, and we're looking forward to welcoming existing customers and new ones too. Membership is free, so why not sign up today?" Free story time and rhyme time sessions have also resumed at Central Children's, Bilston, Springvale, Warstones, Wensfield and Whitmoreen's libraries. Schools interested in arranging class visits should email elizabeth.whitehouse@wolverhampton.gov.uk to find out more. Half-term events are being planned at Central Children's Library, while digital support sessions and the Adults Reading Group will resume in the near future. Anyone can sign up for the Adult Reading Group, and they're invited to register their interest by emailing andrew.miles@wolverhampton.gov.uk. Adults can also enjoy a virtual reading group and join in with discussions about popular titles either over the phone or online. Phone 01902 552 025 or email readingfriends@wolverhampton.gov.uk for more details.
Up now, we hear from Mary, who has for us a piece all about a bionic eye implant, which has recently been carried out on an 88-year-old woman who's delighted she's regained sight.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Mary Buckley with news of scientific breakthrough. An 88-year-old woman has told of her joy at becoming the first patient in the UK to benefit from a groundbreaking bionic eye implant that has enabled her to detect signals for the first time since going blind. The woman from Dagenham suffers from geographic atrophy. The condition is the most common form of dry age-related macular degeneration, AMD, which affects millions of people worldwide and can cause loss of sight. Experts say the breakthrough offers hope of restoration of sight to people suffering vision loss because of dry AMD. It involves a revolutionary chip that was implanted behind her blind left eye. High-tech cameras she was given to wear captured the scene in front of her before relaying the data to the implant that sent electrical signals to her brain, just like natural vision. Losing the sight in my left eye through dry AMD has stopped me from doing the things I love, like gardening, playing indoor bowls and painting with watercolours, the as-yet-unnamed woman said in a statement released by Moorfields Eye Hospital, NHS Foundation Trust. I am thrilled to be the first to have this implant, excited at the prospect of enjoying my hobbies again, and I truly hope that many others will benefit from this too. She received the Prima system device, developed by Pixum Vision in France, at Moorfields in London as part of a Europe-wide clinical trial backed by the National Institute of Health Research, Biomedical Research Centre at Moorfields, and the UCL Institute of Ophthalmology. The implant works by surgically inserting a 2mm-wide microchip under the centre of the patient's retina. The patient then wears special glasses containing a video camera that is linked to a small computer attached to their waistband. The chip captures the video provided by the glasses and in turn transmits this to the computer, which uses artificial intelligence algorithms to process the data and guide the focus of the glasses. Mahi Makwit, consultant vitreoretinal surgeon at Moorfields Eye Hospital, said, "The success of this operation and the evidence gathered through this clinical study will provide the evidence to determine the potential of the treatment. This groundbreaking device offers the hope of restoration of sight to people suffering vision loss due to dry AMD."
TNF Soundings.
That's very interesting, Mary. Thank you very much. Up now, we have our final block of local news. And starting this one, we first hear Christine.
A big-hearted girl has knitted New Cross Hospital staff hats to thank them for delivering her sister. Gabrielle Ellis, aged 10, was amazed when she found out staff had given her sister Sienna a hat when she was born 6 years ago because her mother was rushed to hospital without any clothes for her impending baby. Mother Tara Messiah said, "We were going through old memory boxes and Gabrielle asked about Sienna's hat, and when she heard the story, she decided to start knitting hats." She learned how to knit at Royal Wolverhampton School, and she had made 12 already. She added, "We all went to New Cross Hospital neonatal unit to hand them over, and the staff were amazed. They're sending Gabrielle a letter of thanks for all her effort." The schoolgirl from Willenhall is going to continue knitting hats for worthy causes and has enlisted the help of her sister Sienna too. Tara said, "They are great together, and I think we will be seeing a lot of these hats around Willenhall and Wolverhampton from now on."
Stained glass artist Esther Naylor has created decorative windows for a restaurant in Birmingham. Esther, aged 48, who works from her home studio known as Off the Wall Stained Glass at Hales Owen, followed her father into the trade and carried out her first commission when she was only 9 years old. Her latest commission from Alex Maslagani, owner of De La Vieille's on Hagley Road, Edgbaston, took 6 months' intensive work to complete and includes 9 window panels which depict the Birmingham Bull. These were based on the original fiberglass bulls that were located around the bullring in the 60s. Esther said, "This is the biggest commission that I have ever received, and I really had to make use of my own imagination and recreate things in my mind, as Alex did not give me any real kind of a design brief. He said that he did not want to see a design, which is just unprecedented, really. Somehow he trusted me to do the right thing with the windows. It turned out we were on the same creative wavelength, as the feature window of the bull matched the colour of the tiles he'd used for that area. The window panels forming the bull are downstairs by the bar area. As well as the fact that this is a steakhouse, the bull window is a representation of Birmingham and the fiberglass bulbs that once adorned the old bull ring. In all, I was asked to create a total of 16 windows, and the others are on the upper level. I think that people will think that this is an amazing space." Alex said, "Esther has done beautiful work, which can be seen in the steak and grill area and the upstairs, which we plan to open as a coffee bar in March."
An arts festival has been judged a success by a member of a city council. The 2022 Wolverhampton Literature Festival drew crowds of more than 1,600 people to the city and saw a total of 40 events take place across 8 venues. Events during the 3-day festival, which ran from Friday, February the 4th, to Sunday, February the 6th, included children's storytelling, educational workshops, theatre and performance, literature, poetry reading, music and art talks. The events kicked off with the Wolverhampton Poet Laureate handover from Emma Purse House to Cooley Coley at Wolverhampton Art Gallery. There were also In Conversation events with comedians Phil Wang and Miles Dupe at Bilston Town Hall and Robin Ince at Wolverhampton Art Gallery, as well as music chat from snooker legend Steve Davis and Kavis Tarabi at Newhampton Art Centre. The festival also included an online programme for bookworms to enjoy from the comfort of their own home, as well as ticketed, free and donation-only events. Councillor Stephen Simkins, Wolverhampton Council Deputy Leader and Cabinet Member for City Economy, said, "The festival has been a huge success, with a range of events for everyone to get involved in. It is a great asset to the city and brings acts and visitors from far and wide. It was great to get back to live events after last year's festival moved online as a result of the pandemic. The festival provided tremendous variety with people of all ages participating. The feedback has been very positive, and thanks to Arts Council England funding, we can now look forward to next year's festival."
A Black Country Cycling Club joined celebrations to mark the start of a countdown to the Commonwealth Games. Hales Owen Cycling Club joined senior Dudley Council bosses to begin the 6-month countdown to the Games in the summer, an event that will showcase the region as the cycling time trial passes through it in August. Dudley will be hosting a large section of the cycling time trial on the 4th of August. The race starts and finishes in Wolverhampton, but much of the course will run along the streets of Dudley, taking in key sites such as Himley Hall and Coronation Gardens. The route runs through Dudley Town Centre from Birmingham New Street and passes Coronation Gardens and Stone Street Square, whilst also taking it in Sedgley and Gornal before heading past Himley Hall. Councillor Simon Phipps, Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Enterprise, said, "This is a significant event through the heart of Dudley and gives us an opportunity to showcase what we have in the borough on an international stage. It is our opportunity to be part of a global event, and I am delighted we have chosen to do that. It will of course naturally cause some disruption to roads whilst it is on, so I would urge people to check out the game's new Get Set page and plan their journeys accordingly."
People love them for a reason, and now a musical dedicated to the lives of the Osmond brothers is heading to Wolverhampton Grand. The Osmonds, a new musical, is hoping to take Wolverhampton by storm when it plays at the Grand Theatre from March 15th to the 19th. Production images have now been released, giving audiences a sneak preview of what they can expect next month. The show stars Joseph Peacock as Donny Osmond, Alex Lodge as Jay Osmond, and Georgia Lennon as Marie Osmond. With a story by Jay Osmond, the musical tells the true story of the five brothers from Utah who were pushed into the spotlight as children and went on to create smash hits decade after decade. The musical takes audiences on the journey of the famous brothers from their star residency on The Andy Williams Show from 1962 to 1969, to Pop Stars and Osmond Mania from 1971 to 1975, and to the arrival of the Donny and Marie Show from 1976 to 1979. Everyone's favourite tracks will feature in the show, including Crazy Horses, Love Me For A Reason and Puppy Love. The Osmonds have sold over 100 million records worldwide and won 59 gold and platinum awards. For more information and to book tickets, go to grandtheatre.co.uk or call 01902 429212.
Now it's time to hear from a very thirsty Flashback Roger for his Did You Know feature.
Hello everybody. I hope that you're all okay this week. Well, I'd like to report that I was inundated with Valentine's cards this year, but of course I can't. Not even a humorous one. Ah well, onwards and upwards, as they say. So let's have a look at one of our great British drinks, the good old cup of tea. Now then, did you know that? It takes around 2,000 tiny leaves to make just 1 pound of finished tea. Tea plants grow wild in parts of Asia, but it's mostly farmed on huge tea plantations. The very best tea comes from high elevations and is hand-picked. And do you know the difference between black tea and green tea? Well, black tea is oxidised and green tea is not. To make black tea, leaves are first rolled and then exposed to air to trigger the oxidation process. On the other hand, green tea is processed to prevent oxidation, and so is much lighter in colour than black tea. All tea comes from the Camellia sinensis plant, an evergreen shrub that can grow up to 60 feet in the wild. When cultivated for harvest, tea bushes are kept to a height of about 3 feet. There are about over 3,000 varieties of tea and are named after the area in which they're grown, like Yunnan from China, Assam from India and Darjeeling, which is considered the champagne of teas. Have you ever wondered how the term caddy gets its name? The term caddy is derived from the Chinese word catty, a Chinese pound, which is a unit of weight equivalent to 600 grams. This is also the measurement by which tea has been sold. The English picked up the word and started using the word caddy to mean a container for tea. The first tea bags first appeared commercially in 1904. Legend has it that they were intended to be a measure only, where customers were intended to remove the leaves. But they instead simply used the bag of leaves to infuse in the pot or cup. What a good idea. Do you think it'll catch on? During the 1700s, it was cheaper to buy illegally smuggled tea than buy it legally, as the tax imposed made it only affordable to the rich, although even they drank more illegal tea than legal. Just 1 pound of tea cost then the equivalent of 3 weeks' pay. The Tea Act reduced duty, which made legal tea cheaper and affordable to the masses, and cheaper then than the illicitly smuggled tea. Well, there's certainly a lot more than I could ever include here about our humble cuppa. I don't know about you, but I think it's time to put the kettle on, break open my Kit Kats, and put my feet up for 10 minutes. So I'm off. Till next week, then, I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra!
Now we have our sportsman, Ian, giving you all the latest football news from Wolves and West Bromwich Albion.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. Albion ended a run of three successive defeats, but they didn't get the win they craved after being held to a goalless draw by Blackburn. On what was Steve Bruce's first game in charge of the Baggies at the Hawthorns, the two promotion rivals both entered the game desperate to get back on track following a poor run of form. For Albion, it was a night where things once again failed to click in the final third. Andy Carroll had a couple of half chances while Adam Reach saw a header right at the death cleared off the line. For Blackburn, Ben Brereton-Diaz was lively throughout and saw a goal chalked off for offside. Substitute Rida Kadra also stung the palms of Sam Johnston with a fierce strike from inside the box late in the second half. Overall, though, both teams struggled to create clear-cut chances with a point apiece fair on the balance of play. The result sees Albion move up to 8th in the Championship table, with Bruce's side 3 points behind 6th-placed Middlesbrough. They next take on Luton away on Saturday and then have a trip north to fellow promotion rivals Middlesbrough on Tuesday. A first-half mauling put Wolves firmly back in the race for the European spots as they clinically dispatched Tottenham Hotspur. The visitors made the perfect start after 6 minutes when Raul Jimenez volleyed home his first goal in a month in front of a packed away end. From that moment, Wolves survived one or two scares before Leander Dendonca slid in from close range to give them a deserved 2-0 lead only halfway through the first 45 minutes. Spurs threw everything at it in the second half and piled on the pressure as Wolves sat deeper defending their lead. Despite some close calls, the visitors hung on for a clean sheet and an important 3 points that put them 1 point above Spurs and into 7th in the league, albeit having played a game more than the London club. Speaking after the game, manager Large said, "I think we had a good game for 90 minutes, very good, especially the first 45 minutes. We are playing against a top team. Their manager is one of the best and everywhere he goes he gets results. It was important we came to play against them with the character I've been asking for the last few weeks. Especially when we arrive with 34 points, I don't want anyone comfortable. I want them to give one step forward and come with character to play our game." Wolves next welcome Leicester to Molineux for Sunday evening league encounter.
Up now we have a piece from the Thomas Pocklington Trust, who has spoken to Callum Stoneman, who is a network designer at BT. Here he shares with us what working means to him, the assistive technology he uses for his role, and advice to other blind and partially sighted people looking to get on or progress in their careers.
My name is Callum Stoneman and I currently work for BT as a network designer. It's kind of a technical job, but I guess in simple terms, we configure and manage routers and switches and servers and other general networking devices, and we maintain them when things go wrong. My sight condition is quite a rare one. It's called Norrie disease, and that causes complete blindness from birth, so I don't even have light perception or anything. I've always been quite a technical person, so I enjoy being able to get quite hands-on with the technology, and BT are pretty futuristic. I applied for the job because I'd done a networking degree at university and I always wanted a career in IT. That's what I've always been looking for. I just desperately wanted a job, you know, I just wanted to be working like a normal person and, you know, paying my own way in life and, you know, making a career for myself. Like, that was just something that was natural for me. I couldn't see any other way of living. And when I saw this, it was just kind of one, working in IT, and two, working for BT. I didn't think there was anyone better that you could get this sort of career with, really. I guess JAWS is the main software. It's like that's the most important one. So that's used for literally everything on my laptop. So whether it's simple things like, you know, reading and responding to emails, literally everything. The Braille Note, I always find that really useful for when I'm dealing with networking commands or software commands, where there's often quite a lot of long bits of text or quite a lot of numbers when you're talking about things like IP addresses, which when they're read really, really fast by a screen reader, they can kind of all jumble into one and kind of sound the same. Whereas with the Braille display, it really helps a lot being able to physically read it. I think a benefit for me of being blind is increased confidence. I often do just call things out and say, actually, can we do this in a different way? Sometimes, you know, I've not really realised that I've had that confidence, and luckily it's always been really well received. For the future, I mean, I just want to, you know, keep doing well at this job, and in some ways I'm still surprised to actually be here, to be honest. So I'm just, I'm very much just kind of seeing where this takes me. When something's not accessible or when something's not done in the best way, it always feels like you're falling at the first hurdle. As long as you're confident in what you can do and you have faith in yourself and you're willing to not give up and just keep trying, eventually someone will see that, like they'll see through the disability and they will take that chance. And it's well worth it.
What does the weather have in store for us? Well, now's the time to find out. The weather for the week ahead starts off wet and windy, but will settle as the week progresses. Temperatures will be typically hovering around 10 degrees. UV levels are expected to be low throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:11 a.m. for the sunrise and 5:54 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 18th of February, we have light rain and a fresh breeze with a maximum temperature of 8 degrees. For Saturday 19th of February, we have light rain and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 8 degrees. On Sunday 20th of February, we have light rain showers and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees. Moving on to Monday 21st of February, we have light cloud and a moderate breeze, with maximum temperatures of 11 degrees. On Tuesday 22nd of February, we have light rain showers and a moderate breeze, with maximum temperatures of around 10 degrees. For Wednesday 23rd of February, it's sunny intervals with a gentle breeze, with a maximum temperature of 10 degrees. And finally, on Thursday 24th of February, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze, with a maximum temperature of about 9 degrees. So, that's your forecast for the week. Do enjoy it if you can. Up now, we hear from Pete, who has for us a piece all about video magnifiers and how they may be of benefit to you.
If you're struggling with reading and need a magnifier, have you ever considered a video magnifier, or sometimes known as a digital magnifier? Well, Beacon have a range of video magnifiers that you can come in and try. Now, a video magnifier, you can increase or decrease the magnification, so you can turn it up a bit or you can turn it up quite a lot to help you read. You can change contrast settings on a video magnifier, so you can look at something in true colour, or you could change the contrast to black on white, or white on black, or yellow on black, or black on yellow. It's whatever works best for you, so there's a range of combinations there that you can try to find the right one. You can also freeze images on a video magnifier. So let's say there's something in your fridge, a piece of some food. You could take a little picture because the angle's a bit difficult to read of it, and then bring the magnifier away and then zoom it up. So if it's something like the sell-by dates or ingredients on food, you can read it comfortably there. So video magnifiers range from small handheld magnifiers you can sit comfortably in an armchair to read with, up to medium-sized ones, which are about the size of laptops, and then there's desktop magnifiers with big, large 24-inch screens, which really make magnification strong. So, if you would like to try a video magnifier to see if that would help you, you're very welcome to. Just call Beacon's Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment. And remember, bring something you struggle to read with you. So if you'd like to try a video magnifier, give us a call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a Sight Loss Advisor. 01902 880 111.
Cheers for filling us in on those, Pete. Up now, we get to find out how well you did at the quiz. So then, here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Here we go. Question 1. How many leaves approximately does it take to make 1 pound of tea? And the answer? Well, it's 2,000. Question 2. What are the two main types of tea? And the answer for this? It's black and green. Question 3. How tall would tea bushes grow if left in the wild? And the answer? It's 60 feet. Question 4. Where did the word caddy originate? And the answer for this one? Well, it's from China, and in particular, their word chatty. Question 5. When did the first tea bag commercially appear? And the answer? It's 1904. And finally, question 6. Who sold cheaper tea in the 1700s? And the answer? Well, of course, it's those smugglers. How'd you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to this week's Guess the Sound question that I asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a wind-up mechanism. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we have a TNF soundings feature about the evolution of the calendar, brought to us by Alastair.
TNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
This is Our Calendar, written and read by Alastair. If it had been possible to listen to this in 1752, you would be looking ahead to a phenomenon which took place in that year and which still has an echo for everyone paying taxes, and especially in one Scottish borderland common riding ceremony right down to the present day. In the borderland, anyone who turns out on the last Friday of July to hear the crying of the fair in 17th century Scots at Langham Common Riding will hear the expression old style added to the date of the fair, and anyone who wasn't aware that the calendar changed in 1600 in Scotland, you might wonder what on earth this means. At the end of the 16th century, there was a great debate across Europe about how to correct the Julian calendar, which had been in use since Roman times, but which was increasingly out of kilter with the Earth's orbit and the seasons of the year. So, in 1582, Pope Gregory XIII decreed a change which effectively meant that 11 days had to disappear. Strictly speaking, his decree only applied to the Roman Catholic Church, but it was increasingly adopted by the civil authorities in countries where the Roman Catholic Church dominated. The Protestant churches and their civil authorities mostly refused to recognize it, regarding it as a popish plot. In Scotland, King James VI proclaimed that the country should move to start the new year on the 1st of January from 1600. In England, Queen Elizabeth was in favour of the change but was talked out of it. And after the union of the crowns in 1603, King James did not insist on the change in England. So, south of the border, the calendar didn't change until 1752, when up until then, the new year had always begun on the 25th of March, known as Lady Day. Lady Day commemorates the visit of the Archangel Gabriel to the Virgin Mary to let her know that she would bear the Son of God. Eventually, in the United Kingdom, England and Wales, under King George II, switched from what was known as the Julian calendar, which became old style, to the new style Gregorian calendar in September 1752 and came into line with Scotland. In order to manage the change, 11 days were dropped from the calendar. The day after the 2nd of September 1752 became the 14th of September 1752. Before 1752 in England, the year began on the 25th of March, so the day after the 31st of December 1751 was the 1st of January 1752, which left 1751 as a short year, running only from the 25th of March to the 31st of December. Lady Day was traditionally one of those days when rents and taxes were due. With the loss of 11 days in September 1752, people were not so impressed with having to pay their taxes only another 9 months or so later, in March 1753, as though nothing had happened. So, as a sweetener, the taxman skipped the 11 days and decreed that taxes were not due until the 6th of April 1753. And that is why, to this day, the United Kingdom tax year starts on the 6th of April.
TNS Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!